Welcome to Heal Your World on Heavenly World Network Blog Talk Radio. Join me, Heaven Lee, for angel guidance messages to help you embrace who you are and fearlessly create the life you desire. Visit me on intuitivespiritguide.com for your personal angel guidance reading. I write novels and children's books filled with imagination to carry you to beautiful new worlds. Endymion Oracle's Nina's Story is a romantic fantasy adventure with healing goddess magic and ancient wisdom inside. Get ready! We're traveling deep within. So open your heart to the limitless possibilities and let's make some real magic. Happy Friday! Welcome to Heal Your World. I'm Heaven Lee, and today I'm welcoming to the show a very special guest who has become a fast friend. Just, you know how those things happen? You talk to somebody for the first time, and like, have I known you in another lifetime or something? Help me welcome author of Michael Jackson, The Man in Our Mirror, A Reflection of Our Collective Soul. I love that title. Here she is, Lisa.
Yay!
Welcome.
Well, thank you, Heaven. It's nice to be here this morning.
Well, I'm so happy you can be here with us. I did, actually, I mean, give me a round of applause. I did finish your book last night. I was already more than halfway through. And then after we talked yesterday, wow, it's just such a beautiful message. I want to jump right in, and I want you to tell people what it's about.
Well, what's it about? It's basically my story from the early 80s when I was a teenager and had become aware of Michael Jackson, like pretty much the rest of the world, when he launched onto the scene in the biggest way through Thriller. And,
right.
You know, I was 14 and Billie Jean was on the radio, and coming from a family of, you know, musical musicians and artists, music was always a part of our life. And so, but there was something special about Billie Jean that caught my ear and soul. And from that moment, I was captivated by who Michael Jackson was. And it wasn't until 1985 when he came out with We Are the World where I really was drawn to him for his humanitarian heart. And yes, from that point on, in the late 80s, I started to get these strong feelings, impressions, visions. I grew up I didn't realize it at the time, but very precocious, and I was feeling and sensing things all around me. And it wasn't until my late teens and the late 80s that I started to recognize that I was aware of things. And I started to sense and see Michael, as ludicrous as it sounds. We were growing up in the Midwest in a small town, Richmond, Minnesota. And I just kept getting these really, yay, Minnesota, getting these strong impressions and visions that I was going to, or Michael was going to come into our family's life in some way. And of course, I was just thinking, okay, Lisa, you're just a fan like everybody else. Everybody wants to meet Michael and this and that. But it was deeper than that. I've always been a journal writer since I was a little kid and was always thinking about the world and had, you know, felt the pain of the world ever since I was little and wanted to do something to help it. And so I was writing in my journal often and writing my thoughts and visions. And then I started seeing Michael in interviews or reading something that he had said, and he was basically saying the same exact thing that I was writing in my journal. I thought, what is going on here? And his his familiarity, there was something familiar about his soul that intrigued me, and I just kept getting strong feelings that he was going to come into our life one day. And again, here he is, the world's greatest entertainer. I'm in a small town of 900 people in Minnesota, I really didn't share that with too many people for obvious reasons. They would have thought I was off the deep end. But it got so strong that I had to tell somebody. And the only person that I felt I could tell that wouldn't, you know, laugh me off the block was my mom. And I told
That's
her, I said,
wonderful.
You know, I don't know what it's. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what I would have done if I would have just been, you know, had to hold it in myself. And so
right.
when I told her, I said, I don't know what's going on, but I just get this really strong feeling that Michael Jackson is going to come into our life one day. And my mom, being the amazing person that she is and always open to life, her response was just, well, I guess we'll see then, won't we? And that's what began.
I love
what
your mom. I love your mom from your book. I mean, I just like I'm in love with this woman. I have never even met her, but her whole life philosophy from children being the bright beings that know more than adults do. I just love her philosophy on that, and I've actually mentioned it a lot on the show. So I just had to throw that in. Hi, Judy. I love you. Okay, go ahead. Keep going. This is fascinating stuff.
Yeah, you know, it's just, like I said, these things started to happen, these, what if we want to call them coincidences. I don't believe in coincidences. I think we're all connected, and they're more synchronicities. And when we're in tune with life, these things, we start to notice them, or sometimes they just knock us over the head because they're so obvious. But these things started to happen, which I call the Michael miracles. These events and happenings and, like, that kept directing to Michael. And one of them
Great.
Was one of the biggest ones. After I had told my mom about this, it wasn't long after that she went to go visit a friend in Sedona, Arizona. And when she was there, she went to a psychic, because my mom, like I said, she was always open to these things. And so when she came back from that trip, I remember it well, I was in my room, and she came in there and with a cassette tape of the recording of her session with the psychic, and she closed the door and she says, I need you to listen to a part of this session that I had with the psychic. And I said, okay. And she fast forwarded to the point that she wanted me to hear. And this woman, psychic, who had never met my mom, of course, said to her, you have a daughter that you're very close to. And my mom said, yes. And she says, well, you were sisters in a past life during the Renaissance time. And here I am, imagine 18-year-old Lisa sitting there. Now, I'd heard of reincarnation. I had never really pondered it. So I was open, but I really didn't know what to think. So I'm just listening with an
right.
open mind and heart. And then the woman says, you were sisters in a past life during the Renaissance, and she said you were actually in competition with each other over a prince who was living at that time. And I'm just kind of sitting there listening, you know, not really sure
Love
what
it.
This is all about. Yeah. And then the woman, psychic, closes her eyes, and she's like, I don't know if this means anything to you, but the energy that I keep picking up on is Michael Jackson. Does that mean anything to you? Now, point is, I'm listening to this. I'm going, okay, what is going on here? And my mom says to the psychic, well, that's interesting that you say that. My daughter just told me, you know, not that long ago that she feels a familiarity with him, and that she just feels that has a vision that he's going to come into our lives one day. And she said, well, he was a prince during the Renaissance time, and you knew him then. Now, you know, again, I'm pretty open, but at 18 years old, this was all a little bit more than my mind could grasp. And, you know, at that moment, I just wanted simplicity. I just wanted a feeling of normalcy. And, of course, my horse, Little Miss, who I've had since I was 13, I just wanted to go ride her. Like, she was my normalcy. She was, in that moment, that was just, okay, it was interesting information. I don't know what to do with that. I'm not going to downplay it, but I just I really don't know how to wrap my mind around that. So anyway, that began kind of the, I call the Michael Miracles. And to top that off, not even a week later, I was sitting in the living room watching Entertainment Tonight at that time. And listen, they were talking about Michael Jackson, and they were showing him in Italy walking around Michelangelo's, and they were referring to him as the Renaissance man. Now, my mom was in the other room. I immediately yelled to her to come in and sit and watch.
Yes.
And I think we just sat in silence, and we were like, okay, this is interesting. And so not to go into all
validation.
Of these. Yes, all of these, what I say, again, the Michael Miracles that happened over the next years, but the Renaissance theme kept happening. And, of course, I write about it in my book. And so what the book is really about, it's about this journey of spirit that I believe Michael has taken me on. But also, you know, because I was open to life and you know, I was always a seeker, you know, you know, looking deeper at life. Like, what is our purpose here? Like, why are we here on this little planet, this speck in the universe? And so I was just reading everything. I was, you know, about different religions, philosophies. You know, I just felt like there had to be some kind of universal truth. And I was determined, you know, to connect with that. And so I was reading lots of books. One of my favorite books was Richard Bach's Jonathan Livingston Seagull, Illusions. My Aunt Diane. You know, all of those that talk about, you know, the bigger picture of who we are, I believe. And so anyway, it just, I was just, so it's a journey of spirit, and Michael was a part of it. And so that's what this book is about, kind of what I was, it's a journey of my life through all these years with these Michael Miracles happening, and how I was perceiving them, how I was taking them in, how it was expanding my view of life, of ourselves, of each other. And so the first half of the book is called, you know, From Minnesota to Michael, because what ended up happening back, we ended up moving to California, and again, in a way that no one could have predicted, my mom ended up working as a housekeeper at Neverland in the mid-90s. And, you know, again, I don't know how much detail you want me to go into, but that is all talked about how that evolved.
Lisa, you're one of the very few people, maybe the first, that I'm interviewing and I'm thinking, oh, I wish you would talk about this now. And then you just go right to it. So I'm just having fun. It's like, wow, you're making my job very easy. And it also is so validating in everything you're saying. And I noticed this in just talking to you on the phone, how fluid you just pick up on spirit.
Mm.
And I was just thinking, oh, I wish we'd get to that part about her mom working at Neverland, because people are just going to love that. So, yeah, I would love to hear just a few of her experiences, and especially when she actually encountered him for the first time, and how sweet that was, and about the wrapping of Christmas presents. If you would relay those two stories, I think that would mean an awful lot to our listeners.
Okay, so let's see here. I'd have to look in my book and see where that actually was. And I love my mom's stories in this book. She writes so as she speaks. And they're so
and
genuine.
And I didn't put you on the spot. Just in general, just how he was, especially the wrapping the Christmas presents, that just how he was. I mean, that you don't have to find the exact spot if you don't want to.
Well, let me take a look here, and I have to remember where I actually put that in, but I think it was in the child's.
Okay. Well, while you're doing that, I'm going to give them your website. So after the show, they can go to your website, see your blog, see how to get the book, and this is maninourmirror.com, www.maninourmirror.com. There's a lot there. There's a lot. I love reading your blog. And more about the book. So I didn't mean to put you on the spot. just
no worries, no worries.
I love that story.
Okay, I'll read the part where my mom comes on to Neverland for the first time.
Yes. And what day was that, by the way?
Oh, isn't that interesting? What? It was on January 23rd, 1993. So this day, what is it, 22 years ago?
Years ago, yeah. Yes. My listeners who listen to me, you know, any length of time know that I am so into numbers and so into dates. And I see Mary from the UK, Mary Chapman Arts, in chat. And so I know she's just like rolling her eyes and giggling at the same time. Yes, January 23rd. When she first went to Neverland. Tell us.
So this is my mom's words. Overwhelmed, but not in an ooh or ah sense, is how I would describe January 23rd, 1993, my first day at Neverland. I had lived in California for almost 3 years now, and almost every day I was still wondering how and why and where and when this process of relocating from my 10 acres between two beautiful lakes in Minnesota had started. There were lots of really big changes that were happening in my life during the 3 years before my employment at Neverland. I think that time could have been described as survival in the sense of me leaving the security of my extended family, house, and land and deciding to go for an opportunity in California. The choice tested me beyond anything I had ever known. Being a single mother now, I had, and having to learn to take care of myself and my son completely on my own in one of the most expensive counties in the U.S., I was certainly in pragmatic mode, a one foot in front of the other type of existence. My daughter Lisa had moved to California the year before me and was attending Pepperdine University, doing all she could to put herself through school, so I was well aware of the challenges that my children and I were facing as we settled into our new lives in the San Ynez Valley. I will scroll down and go to, I remember being shown the main house entrance and told that there I would meet Gail, who would explain the duties of the housekeepers and the main buildings and areas where we would be responsible for. The thought of working for a celebrity of this caliber was daunting, but I thought there must be a reason why I was here. It hardly seemed like I'd done anything really to secure a job such as this. A couple of years later, a dear friend Kiki, who I worked with at Neverland, said to me one day, "How did we ever get hired at Neverland? You and I both never even filled out an application." I remember both of us thinking how strange that was. She was brought in by a reference and hired almost immediately, and so was I, only through a completely different set of circumstances. Very interesting is all I could say. And then, And then Michael wasn't there when she first started. He was on his tour, right. I think, the Dangerous Bad. Tour.
Dangerous. Yeah. Dangerous. That's right. Dangerous.
Yes, in 1993. So she was quite relieved that he actually wasn't there when she first started because, you know, just wrapping her mind around the fact that here she is driving on the property of Neverland. Like, you know, 5 years ago we were in Minnesota, you know, living on our land between the lakes, you know, in the country. And here we are in California and she's driving on to Neverland. So a bit surreal, to say the least. So I'll continue reading where Mom actually met Michael for the first time. I was there all of 2 weeks, I believe, and was actually so glad that Michael wasn't around simply because I couldn't have handled it if he had been. There was really way too much for me to get comfortable with, much less having a superstar walk in and say hi. Oh, boy, that was actually the part I dreaded, but I knew it was going to be a reality at some point. Well, that point came sooner than later, and of course, it's when I'm all alone in the laundry room just folding towels and having a quiet moment by myself, when here comes a superstar in his black hat and long black tresses walking by the window. I think to myself, can this be? He is all by himself. I am all by myself. This is not how I imagined meeting the king of pop in such a quiet environment with no one around. Just him, all by myself.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah.
And you predicted it. And you predicted all this. I mean, you just knew in your spirit somehow. And I believe, as you mentioned in other places in your book, where he would tell you, where you would hear, I believe that he told you. I used to think, and a lot of people, I think, believe that spirit doesn't contact you until after they pass, and then they have that power to contact you. But he changed my mind about that. And I have known and seen and experienced spirit contacting through dream, through thought. That's pretty powerful spirit that can do that. And that was part of his life purpose. I have a couple people in chat that just want to say hi. Rosalind Camus, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, Rosalind. And Mary from the UK. She says hi. She says, Michael got her home with 2 minutes to spare. Now I see why. So she could listen to the show today. Well, hi, Mary. Hi,
aww.
Rosalind.
Excellent.
Yes. I think it's just so beautiful that you are a testament to anybody can do this. Anybody can open up. And I think that's why Michael taught so much through Believe in Magic. Open to the innocence of your heart and remember what it was like to be childlike, because children can believe. They can believe.
Yeah.
And this is something I think that was a huge message, and you talk about that in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to go through and you know what? I'm going to let them read. You know, you have to buy the book to read about Michael and the Christmas presents. It's such a cute story. You have to buy the book to read that. Okay, we're going to save some surprises for you. But let's go through and what we talked about that you wanted to express and let people know through this time we have together, and what you observed about Michael and his soul through all the years of observing him, obviously having a very strong connection that you knew that he would meet with your family. You knew that that would happen.
Yeah, I mean, you know, now from this present moment looking back, I mean, I am so humbled to this day by this whole journey. Like, I might have lived it, but I am just as humbled as anybody else. It's still beyond, you know, what our logical mind can put together, like how this all happened. And that, you know, for all of these years, you know, excuse me, I thought, of course, I'm, you know, these things are happening because for some reason I'm going to meet him. Well,
yes,
I never got the chance to meet him, believe it or not. I got the chance, I got as close to Michael as my mom. And I also was able to go to Neverland myself. He would have family day for his employees and all of his staff, including the ranch staff, which was probably over 100 employees, and his Los Angeles office. So he would have family days once or twice a year where he'd open the ranch to staff and all of their family and friends. And I remember mom saying, you know, who do you want to bring? And I said, well, what do you mean? Is there a limit? And, you know, I'm expecting, well, you can only bring two friends or something. And she says, well, really, there's no
right.
limit. And I'm like, there's no limit?
Oh, wow.
Like,
oh.
So I think one time I brought like 5 or 6 friends. And I mean, here we are like in our 20s and 30s, and we're running around Neverland like we're 12. It was,
yeah.
I mean, it was so yeah. magical. And I said to mom, what time can we be there? She says, it opens at 10. And I said, and when, how long can we be there? She says, it closes at 10 p.m. I said, well, we're not going to be a minute late. And we're not leaving a minute too soon. We are there from 10
right.
to 10.
So, yep. You feel like 12 and you stay for 12 hours. That sounds good to
exactly.
me.
That's right. So,
wow.
So my point is that I got as close. I mean, I got to play at Neverland, you know, and my mom had interaction with Michael. She knew Michael, but I personally never met him. And my mom worked at Neverland until 96, and she was let go for no other reason than they just said they no longer needed her services, which was interesting because it was at a time when Michael was actually asking my mom personally to nanny some of the kids that were there, his cousins and, you know, his family. So she was very active with him at that time. And then one day she came to the ranch and they said her services were no longer needed. So it's kind of a mystery. We never really knew. But after that was in 96, and so after
right.
that, we kind of lost connection with him in that way. But I just always still thought I would meet him. I mean, again, why did all these things happen? Mm. And then when he died, that possibility wasn't there anymore. I was just distraught. I was like, well, yeah. What was this all for? What was this all for? Right. But I had known in 2005 when the trial was going on, I remember all of a sudden it came to me, I will write a book one day, because I was always observing Michael from a distance, even when my mom wasn't there. But like, who is this soul? Who is this powerful being that I believe that we as souls choose to come into this lifetime and whatever experiences and circumstances we're here to learn or discover, all for the whole purpose of discovering that we are divine beings and we are here to express our divinity in each moment through our talents, through our passions. So I was observing Michael and, you know, of who this amazing soul was, you know, like a Nelson Mandela, a Martin Luther King, you know, these powerful people that choose these roles. And what I observed from a soul perspective of Michael during his life when he was here was it seemed that the first 25 years, Michael was totally in his heart and spirit, and he took us with him. He took the world with him through the universal language of music and dance. And in the second part of his life, as we all know, which is all a part of the human condition, was what I call the descent into darkness, into ego, where his struggles, his human struggles, came to the surface. But for divine purpose, we experienced the pain that he experienced. We saw it, we felt it. I felt it, I should say. I should speak for myself. And I just felt like, this is so interesting. It's like his life is playing out the hero's journey, like Joseph Campbell. You know, we are born in our divinity as children. We are aware of our consciousness and that everything is magical and life is miraculous. But we are conditioned as adults or as children. We become conditioned and we are learned that we are limited, that, or we are taught that we are limited beings.
That we are limited.
And that's,
that
we fall into that place of ego, that part of ourselves that believes we're disconnected from our soul, we're disconnected from our source, we're disconnected from each other. And
going through this journey with Michael, how much do these words mean to you? You and I were never separate.
What he's saying there is the divine truth. Absolutely. We are, none of us are separate. Like, let's not be deceived by what our physical eyes see. You know, close your eyes and feel.
Right?
Feel from your heart.
Right.
You know, the separation we feel from each other, the separation we feel from, you know, different cultures, different religions, different parts of the world.
Right.
It's all an illusion, but it's in the mind, it's in our ego. In our ego, we are separate. In our hearts, we are one. And so, you know, the second part of this book is really about...
Before you get to that, there's people going crazy on chat, and so I've got to let this communication come through to you. Craig Miller says, hi, Lisa, way to go on your book, and congratulations. Mary says, she's from the UK. Hi, Mary. She's my Mary Poppins. She says, can't wait to read it. And Rosalind was saying something, too, about, you know, we are our higher selves more than we are physical beings. That's the real truth of it. And Michael was right. Everything else is illusion. So I just wanted to let you know people are with you and cheering you on in chat.
Aw, well, thank you, everyone. That means a lot. Yeah, you know, so yes, I mean, the second part of the book is what I believe Michael was. He was the man in our mirror. And, you know, A Course in Miracles says that, you know, what we see in the outer world is really what we see in ourselves. You know, the life is our reflection. And what we are perceiving is really where we are in ourselves. And so what I talk about in the second part of the book a lot is this human condition, the struggle between our ego and spirit, living from our ego, the part that believes we're separate and disconnected, and what is our life experience when we live from that place versus when we live from our heart and our spirit and we trust in the flow and we are open to it. And living from our heart and spirit is not logical. It is often illogical, but my message is don't live from that place anyway. Be courageous and do it, because there is magic that comes from that place. And that's what Michael wanted us all, is the magic.
Absolutely. Real magic. He spoke with Wayne Dyer about that too, and that's actually my influence for the beginning of the program, saying, let's make some real magic. He absolutely believed in that, and that is the journey he took us on. But, you know, in the world of magic, things can get kind of crazy too, and it all served a purpose. And I want to say in a very good way that big old chapter 18, there's some things in there, you know, people might not agree with everything, but it makes you think. And Michael was all about controversy. So when you get to that part of the book, I say think, feel with your heart. So many things in that chapter, I was just like buzzing with energy through that chapter. Some things I had to turn around and say, oh, yep, that does feel right. And other things I was like, but wait a minute. He had this reason for doing that. So it's just very interesting. I just delve in. This book is multifaceted, which is the best kind of book. It makes you think. You can disagree, but you won't be bored. And you will think, and you will learn things, and you'll learn things about yourself. I'm going to take a quick break, as I usually do, it's about halfway through the show, and we will be right back with more exciting things from Lisa Breezy and her book, Michael Jackson, The Man in Our Mirror, A Reflection of Our Collective Soul. We'll be right back with more from Lisa, so stay with me. Angel Guidance Readings take you on a loving journey filled with messages that your angels and spirit guides long to share with you. You'll discover wisdom to help you with real life issues. Spirit is showing you every day that you are love and you are so very loved. You can find Angel Guidance at intuitivespiritguide.com. We're back. I am sitting here loving this talk that is going by way too fast with Lisa Breezy, the author of Michael Jackson, The Man in Our Mirror, A Reflection of Our Collective Soul. Moving on with what the purpose of this book isn't that much about Michael in its intent and in its reach.
You're right.
Lisa? Yeah. I was hoping it. Are you still there? Great.
Yep, I'm here.
Yes. Explain that because that is huge.
Yes. That even though Michael gives the platform, the medium to his life, you know, gives the metaphors for really what it is we are all going through on this planet. You know, his life was in the amplified, magnified way of the human struggle, the struggle between our heart and spirit versus, you know, mind and ego. But he was, what I try and show in this book, that his struggles were our struggles. His joys were our joys. His pain was our pain. But that really, as the title implies, he's the man in our mirror. He's a reflection of our collective soul. And that we can use, you know, Michael was insecure. You know, he had his insecurities. He was just as human. As he says in, you know, the last line, of Will You Be There, or one of the last lines, is he says, but it's not one of the last lines, but I'm only human. Like that song, yeah. Will You Be There, to me is favorite song of his, because I don't know, it's so prophetic to think that he wrote that song before any of his real figurative and literal trials in life. He wrote it in around, 1989, 90. Think of how prophetic that song is, where he's literally telling us what's going to come ahead. And in the end, he's saying, but I'm only human. And will you still be there? Will you still care when I expose all of myself and my vulnerability? And
no, that song, you're absolutely right. I've never thought of it quite in the way that you just put it. That song is his, do I have to do this? Take this from
yes.
me if
yes.
it can be taken, but thy will be done. I mean, symbolically,
yes.
That's
yes.
that's his song saying that I'm willing to go through this, but if I don't have to, could somebody please stop all this? But he was willing,
yes.
that really pulled a chord in me to say that. So, yes, powerful.
Yes, very powerful. Very powerful. I mean, it's we could even make the comparison, and I might get in trouble for this, but Jesus on the cross saying, Father, why hast thou forsaken me? In that moment, he had a human moment of feeling like he was human and he was alone. And, I see that Will You Be There was kind of that for Michael, like, okay, I'm, this is what I came here to do. I'm going to go into the darkness. I'm going to show you my vulnerabilities, my insecurities, that I'm so painfully human. But it's for divine purpose. And the divine purpose
yes.
is that we feel something. We feel the pain. We feel the uncomfortableness. We feel and we don't make it his. We look at it from ourselves. Where is this pain coming from in ourselves? Because
yes.
I'm a big one on not worshiping Michael. Michael would want
yes.
us to worship
exactly.
him. He wants us to say from a soul perspective, look at what my life was and take it into your own. Take it into your own heart. And where are you suffering? Where are you separate? Where do you still believe that you're disconnected from source? Where do you still believe you're disconnected from your own soul? Where do you
and
still believe that you're disconnected?
This is how you are expressing God, too. I get in trouble on this show regularly. I kind of live to get in trouble, because if I'm not getting in trouble, it's like, well, I'm not pushing the envelope. So, and this is another reason I love you, and I love that you really do it. You really step into the fray. You really go where you say you're going to go. You don't skirt around it. And when we look at God as love, God is love. So when Michael was feeling abandoned and when he was walking through that dark place, and a lot of people were saying, I don't want anything to do with that. And so they were avoiding him and ignoring him. And that is a perfect symbolism to feel that love has turned its back on you. And when you see God as love, then that's exactly how a person would feel walking through all that. And then when he's physically gone and everyone is so just feel like they lost a family member. And we talked about the soul families and how we connect in that way. Many, many people listening today, they're going to know exactly what that means. And they felt that too. And at that time, you feel so sad. I mean, it's just gut-wrenching. Why didn't I reach out to him? Why didn't I reach out to him? But I think all of our spirits always were, and this is him reaching back, and through this book you will find that. What do I have to learn? What does it mean to me? What do I need to do so that all of his pain and anyone who comes to walk through pain, it is not wasted? That is just the huge
yeah.
bright light shining from your book.
Thank you. Yes, and for seeing that, because that's the thing, you know, he ended his life here in the most divine way. And again, people, we can go, oh, but he was whatever. I believe Michael's soul was ready to go. And the circumstances, again, also challenge us. They challenge us to the core. You know, we want to blame. There is divine purpose. I talk about it in the book. Michael could have easily left this physical body after the 2005 trial. As a matter of fact, he was so emotionally and spiritually wrenched that I didn't even know how the man continued to walk. And we saw him every day look weaker and weaker walking into that courtroom. He could have left then, but he stayed on. And what I think is so divine is that he didn't just leave at any time. He left when he was almost ready to put on his This Is It concert.
Yeah,
This Is It,
exactly.
The name of that concert. This Is It. And he gave enough of himself. There is no way Michael could have physically gone through with that concert.
No.
There is no way. And he knew it.
Yes,
he
knew it.
You
can see that in the movie. And I feel that he stayed after the trial for time with his children. He had time in Ireland. He had sweet, beautiful time with them. And I believe that was, you know, the biggest purpose to stay.
Yes.
You're right. He did leave with everybody wanting more and preparing to see him again. And that is exactly the way he wanted to leave. Specifically in your book, but talk about divine. And we're here on January 23rd. Well, Heal the World. If you look on the album, on your iPod, it is 6 minutes and 25 seconds long. That is the length of that song. And 6:25, I think he just really wanted to let people know, I meant to do that. I meant to leave then.
Yes. And we're talking big soul perspective here. Obviously, if we're in our ego human personality perspective, we're like, you know, that feels scary to us. But on a soul perspective is what I'm talking about. The soul isn't caught up in the ego back and forth that we experience in this physical body, in this emotional place. So the soul, right. I believe the soul, who we all are, sees it from a much different perspective than we do in our personality selves. So that's a very interesting, I never knew that about 6:25. Of Heal the World.
Right. I tune into numbers so much, and people know me. Sometimes I get, you know, too tuned into that, but that just reached out and grabbed me. It's like, oh, okay, of course you did. I keep hearing Pee Wee Herman. I meant to do that. But seriously, it's all in the greater scope of things and how dates can come back around. You have a story about that, of miraculous. I mean, you heeded the call from his spirit while he was alive. Lisa, you know, I want you to write this book and tell everybody, what was the date when you're talking to your writing coach about this and talking about contacting him about the book and just letting him know, making him aware? What was that date? What happened on that day?
Well, interestingly enough, I had hired a writing coach because I've been writing a book about my little miss, my horse, who is going to be 34 in May. I've had her since she was a year old. She came from Minnesota to California with me, so she's a Californian girl too. But she, I believe, is just a divine, wise master that has come into this life to teach me many things. So I was actually writing her book for many years, and I hired a writing coach in 2007 to help me write that book. I had never written a book. Well, a week before Michael died, and again, we have no idea who knew he was going to die, we were doing a session over the phone and with my book about Little Miss, and somehow in the beginning of that conversation, Michael came up. in conversation, and I made a comment. I said, oh, gosh, that's a whole other book I'm going to write one day. And she says, well, what do you mean by that? And I said, oh, really? I mean, it's going to take a whole hour to even talk about it. And it's just kind of how I see his soul and what, you know, how he's lived his life here, blah, 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 and what he's here to reflect. And she's like, well, I'm really interested in hearing about that. Do you mind if we take some time to talk about that? Well, we ended up talking the whole hour about it. And she says, and Jean Noel, my writing coach, who is, without her, this book would not have come into play. She was the one who gave me the courage. She says, you've got to be bold. Write it as you felt it. Write it as you saw it. It may be painful. It may trigger things in people. But if you're not going to write it that way, then don't write it at all. That's Michael
right.
wants you to write
yes.
it that way. So I have her
yes.
thank you. Thank you, Jean Noel. You have just, yeah. Anyway, so Jean Noel is very tapped in, very intuitive herself. And at the end of our conversation that day, again, she says to me, Lisa, I don't mean to change your course with your book with Little Miss, but I get a really, really strong feeling it's time for you to write this book about Michael. And I'm like literally going, what? Are you kidding me? Like, I'm in this flow and you're asking me to go this way? Like, that's huge, you know? And but because of what I know about my own journey in life, you know, we can have plans. And then the universe or
yes.
God says, no, I've got something else in mind for you right now. And so I knew I had to stay open. And she says, how about this? Why don't you just take the next week to just be open to the possibility? And let's schedule our next session next Thursday, June 25th, 2009, just so everybody knows.
Wow.
Again, we have no idea Michael's past. Let's schedule our session for that day. But just pick this week to be open, and then you come back to me next week, and we'll see where you are. If it feels right, yes. If not, we'll just keep going with where we are. So needless to say, that week when I opened myself, oh, my God, Michael was everywhere in all surrounding me, his energy. People were talking about him. Michael had drifted off the radar for me for many years, and so all of a sudden I was hearing his music everywhere, and I'm like, oh, my God. And so it hadn't been announced. Thursday, June 25th came. It hadn't been announced if he died. Did he die in 2:20 or he was pronounced dead at 2:26 p.m. California time. And our phone call was set from 1 to 2 o'clock. So we get
wow.
on the phone, and Jean Noel says to me, so where are you with this? What has come to you? And I said, well, I don't even know, but I guess I said, Jean Noel, he was just everywhere. He was just everywhere. And I said, so I guess I'm open to writing this book now. And she says, well, and I said, I just didn't think it would be now. And she says, well, when did you think it would be? And I said, well, God, I hate to even say it, but I just thought it was, you know, probably one day after he died. I said, I just don't even want to say that. And she's like, well, I understand how you feel that way. She says, but I actually think that he would love the perspective that you're writing from, and that he would even be interested. And she's like, there's a way to connect with him. But she says, you don't need him.
Yeah.
You've got a lot here. You know, you don't. But she
wow.
said, I just think he might be interested in your perspective. And anyway, so we talked the whole hour again. And all of these sessions are recorded. She always records my sessions so that I can go back and listen. So they're recorded. So I get off the phone with her. And, I mean, we finished the phone call, and I said, well, I guess for whatever reason, I guess I'm writing this book now. Like, oh, my God. Get off the phone. I get online to check my email, and I'm doing stuff. And then all of a sudden, there comes the headline, Michael Jackson dies of cardiac arrest. Well, you can just about imagine where that put me.
Oh,
I
on the floor.
At the screen.
On the floor.
On the floor, like wiping my eyes, like this cannot be, like I just had the biggest slam in my heart, my chest, and I immediately called her back, Jean Noel, and I said, have you seen the headlines? Have you seen the news? And she says, no, why? And I said, Michael just died. And she was like, oh, my God. She said, if this isn't a testimony to your connection to him, she says, he came to you this week to prepare you for this.
Yep.
And she said,
yes.
And
yes.
she says, and I'm going to tell you right now that if you are open to him, he is more than available to help you write this book. And I can't even tell you, Heaven, what the last 5.5 years. I mean, if we want to talk the Michael Miracles starting back in Minnesota, they were even more intensified with, you know, him helping me. I mean, I was hearing him. Yeah. I would have writer's block, and he would say, Lisa, it doesn't come from your mind. It comes from your heart, right, from your feeling. What are you feeling? This is where creativity comes. You don't need to figure out the chapters and how they're going to just write from feeling. And I got better at that, you know. And trust me, to write a book about this, it was daunting to me, daunting. I'm just little Lisa. I have my business, State of the Heart Fitness in Santa Monica. I have my horse. I have my friends and family. I love my life. And, you know,
That's so cute. I love the way you said that. I'm just little Lisa. Lisa, it's your birthday. Happy birthday, Lisa. It's the birth of your book. Oh, my gosh. So cute.
Yeah.
So cute. But that's who he comes to, my dear, my sweet, wonderful spirit. That's who he comes to, is those that don't think they can do it. And he says, yes, you can. You know, how was it for little Michael? Just little Michael.
Right.
We are such big, big, huge, vast spirits in these little lives that we come to. And your story is a testament for so many others who are feeling this connection, this soul family that he has brought us all into. And, you know, it's so wonderful. I've had so many people over the last 5 years say, am I crazy? Do you think I'm real? You are validation for them. You are a big hug for everybody who thinks, am I crazy? Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Everybody in chat is just like, oh, wow, oh, my God, oh, incredible. They're loving it, and they're loving you. Haven't y'all just fallen in love with her?
Aww.
Mary says,
well,
it's so real. It's so real.
Well, but isn't that what it is? I mean, it all comes down to love. Michael said that over and over and over, and this is it. It's all for love. It's all for love. It's what it is, and that's who we are. And if I've gotten one thing since, you know, in the process of writing this book, since in spirit, he is, well, I had a dream after I saw This Is It. That night I had a profound dream, and whether it's a dream or what, I don't know, but basically, and I talk about this in the book, is that I was somewhere with a group of people, and Michael was there in his physical body, but we all had an awareness that Michael was going to be transitioning in a few minutes or whatever. And all of a sudden he was gone, and people kept talking, and we knew he was in transition. And whether it was 10, 15 minutes, I mean, who knows what time was, all of a sudden he was back, but he was luminescent, and he was appearing to each one of us individually as though we were the only ones in the room. And I was fully aware that this is how Michael shows up to everyone now. And he is available. He wants everybody to know. And he's said all the messages in his songs. Just call my name and I'll be there. He's there. He's here. Yes. He's more alive now than he ever was.
Yes.
So, sorry.
That's exactly what keeps coming through. I love it when you get excited. That's exactly what keeps coming through. Rosalind says in chat, into the laptop and hug Lisa right now.
Aww.
You're from the UK, girl. I got UK girls today. Yay.
Oh, my gosh. Yay. Well, thank you.
1, 2, 3. The way you guys write it would be 2, 3, 1. A, B, C, easy as 2, 3, 1 for you. Oh. January 23rd. I love it. I love the anniversary of when your mom first walked onto the land of never.
Mm-hmm.
How amazing is this? The way he ties everything together.
Absolutely.
And talk about your heart. I want to talk about your heart, your state of the heart business, just briefly, because this all ties in together. And what that means to you, healing our hearts.
Yes, my business is State of the Heart Fitness. I'm an exercise physiologist, wellness coach. I teach spinning, and I'm all about making that connection with our heart, not just our physical heart, but the emotional and spiritual heart. I started State of the Heart Fitness in 2001. And so State of the Heart Fitness is really what the question we ask is, what is the state of your heart? Not just physically, but where are you emotionally? Where are you spiritually? Because it's all so connected. So, you know, what we teach at State of the Heart is, and what we coach people with is to connect with their heart, their spirit, their soul. And we not only take care of our physical body, but that's all connected to the emotional and spiritual body as well. So, you know, the logo that kept coming to me in 2001 when I started my business and was the earth in a heart shape. And I didn't really know why. I mean, I've traveled a lot and I love traveling. I love the world. So I was like, well, I guess maybe State of the Heart will go global one day or something. But that was the image that kept coming to me. Well, in 2011, I was on lunch break sitting on the Santa Monica Beach right outside the Lowe's Hotel where I have my business by the Santa Monica Pier. I'm having lunch and I'm listening to Heal the World. And at the end of the song, I heard Michael say to me, do you get it now? When you heal your heart, you heal the world. And I looked down at my logo that was on my, you know, my shirt, and I was like, oh my God. And he like laughed, like, and I said, you had a hand in that too? And he's like, of course, because I always thought my business
I'm
and the Michael
everywhere.
Story, I'm everywhere. I just always thought that the Michael story and my business was just two different things, but it was like, no, it's all part of the same. And I was like, oh my God. Anyway.
Part of why you were chosen, because he knew your heart, why you were chosen to do the book you wrote. And it's exciting, it's fun, and we talked about this before, like, we should be used to this by now, but you never get used to it, and that's the most fun of all. It's always like a, oh my gosh, that goes together with this and this, that, and this piece of the puzzle, and look at that picture and the puzzle, and oh my gosh, it all fits, it all makes sense, interconnected,
it's magic.
Mary says. Yes. It is magic.
Yes.
That is the real magic. Girl, guess what? We have 2 minutes and 23 seconds left. Yes, tell me something. Tell me something. And we can go a little bit over time, but I just want to let my listeners know it'll cut off here, but you can go back and listen to it and hear the very ending because, hey, we like to talk. Okay, go ahead.
So I just wanted to finish with an excerpt from my book, which is in the last chapter, A Final But Eternal Message, Where There Is Love, I'll Be There. And it says, in January 2012, I went to see Cirque du Soleil's Michael Jackson, the Immortal World Tour show in Los Angeles. At one point during the performance, all of a sudden, I felt so sad that he was no longer here in his body. I felt sad that he hadn't, quote-unquote, completed his mission of wanting to unite and heal the world. How, quote-unquote, tragic. But instantaneously, I heard his voice loud, clear, and strong. I wasn't meant to complete it, Lisa. I was here to lay the foundation, to give the structure, to help guide and show the way. It was never meant for me to do this single-handedly. It's impossible. My purpose was to provide the awakening and get the ball rolling. But the mission of healing the world lies in the hands of all of you. Now and together, as we complete that mission as one collective soul, now is the time for all of you to step up to the plate in your own heart, to take responsibility for healing yourselves so that together we can heal the world. Don't be sad. It is perfect. It's God's perfection, and it is exactly as it's meant to be.
Thank you so much for being here. Yes, thank you so much for being here. Beautiful, and you're still within the hour. I love you, Lisa. I wish you the very, very best with this book. And as I love to say to everyone, yes, go ahead.
No, I just thank you and love you as well and love everybody who's out there. I mean, love, like I said, love is all there is. And we all have a choice in every moment to choose fear or choose love. And, you know, what does love call us to do in each moment? You know, not to judge, not to see ourselves as separate, not to see that person as another person, but to see ourselves in that person, to see ourselves in the mirror.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much for writing this book. I want to say the title of the book again. Go get it, Kindle or paperback. Michael Jackson, The Man in Our Mirror, A Reflection of Our Collective Soul. And as I love to leave you with this thought every week, you are you, Lisa. You, ever listening, you are beauty and eternity within. You are love, and you are so very loved.
Amen.
You, upon a star, makes no difference who you are. Your heart desires can come to you. Your heart is in your dream. No request is too extreme. When you want a star,
upon the